This is podcast number 166 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today we're taking a look at William Lloyd Garrison. We'll be moving into the Civil War next month, and it's time for another reminder. Just as not all the colonists wanted to break away from England, not all of the Northerners were against slavery, and not all of the Southerners were for it. So while you'd think a group of abolitionists who wanted to get rid of slavery altogether would get support from their northern neighbors, it just wasn't the case. Many northern businessmen benefited from slave labor. Even those who agreed that slavery was wrong couldn't see the way for the slaves to be assimilated into society if they were suddenly freed. So they, too, did not support the abolitionist cause. One northerner who lived in Massachusetts took the unpopular stand as an abolitionist against slavery and demanded its immediate end. His name was William Lloyd Garrison. In 1830, he started an abolitionist newspaper, The Liberator, to promote his views. For 35 years, he did not miss publishing a single issue. 1,820 issues in all. Think about that. Many of you who are listening haven't even been alive 35 years. That's a long time to fight for a cause. Which is why I believe he's a great soul worth highlighting. He never gave up until the task was done. Once the slaves were freed, he closed his newspaper and went home. His life was in constant danger because of his views. He was a northerner who believed the Union should be dissolved, because he thought that the Constitution was pro-slavery. Yet when Abraham Lincoln, who was fighting to save the Union, issued the Emancipation Proclamation, he praised the effort, even though he had been at odds with President Lincoln. That's just a little bit of a background to a scene that I want to share with you that illustrates his courage and calm, even when he was in the face of death. I found it in one of Eva March Tappan's Children's Hour volumes, called Adventures and Achievements. Here's the scene. The Mobbing of Garrison. In 1835, the feeling against interfering with slavery was strong, even in the North. William Lloyd Garrison, the great advocate of freedom, was attacked by a Boston mob, as described in the following account. The time appointed for the meeting was 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and a little before that time, Garrison went to Congress Hall and joined the little band of devoted women, mostly white, but including some Negroes and mulattoes, who were undaunted by the presence of a group of howling, swearing, outrageous enemies of human freedom. Garrison appealed to the chivalrous feelings of this disorderly crew, but the effect of his words speedily wore off. As Garrison was the only male abolitionist in the meeting, it was thought that his withdrawal would prevent the gentlemanly mob of auditors from attempting any violence. Acting upon the advice and suggestion of Miss Parker, he retired into the adjoining anti-slavery office. It was impossible to leave the building, for the staircase was now filled by an angry crowd, and below the streets were also filled. Thousands of voices were demanding, "Thompson! Thompson!" The mayor assured the yelling mob that George Thompson was not in Boston and that Garrison had left the building. If the men had escaped, there were still 30 women to be annoyed by the mob of 5,000 respectable gentlemen. Miss Parker opened the meeting with a fervent and untremulous prayer, apparently not concerned by the attitude of the threatening mob around her. The mayor ordered them to go home, but they at first declined. Then a letter was read inviting them to meet at the house of Mr. Francis Jackson. "Ladies," exclaimed the mayor, "do you wish to see a scene of bloodshed and confusion? If you do not, go home." "Mr. Lyman," retorted Mrs. M. W. Chapman, "your personal friends are the instigators of this mob. Have you ever used your personal influence with them?" "I know no personal friends," he replied. "I am merely an official. Indeed, ladies, you must retire. It is dangerous to remain." "If this is the last bulwark of freedom," Mrs. Chapman answered, We may as well die here as anywhere. Finally, it was decided to adjourn. They filed out, two and two, each white lady, where necessary, having with her a colored friend. This heroic band walked through the howling mob in solemn procession to Mr. Jackson's house, and finding that he was ill, walked from there to Mrs. Chapman's home. When the ladies had left the hall, there were cries of, "Garrison is there! We must have Garrison! Lynch him!" The anti-slavery signboard excited their indignation, and it was, with the mayor's connivance, if not by his orders, torn off its hooks and thrown into the street, where it was promptly broken to pieces, some of the bits being secured as precious relics by the friends of the slaveholders. Garrison continued calmly writing in the anti-slavery office until the partition was broken down. There was no hope that the mob would disperse whilst he was in the building. It was impossible for him to leave by the front door, as all the avenues were in possession of the mob. The mayor begged that he would escape from the back of the building. One of the abolitionists, righteously angry at the baseness with which the civil authorities truckled in the lawlessness of the mob, said, "I must henceforth repudiate the principle of non-resistance. When the civil arm is powerless, my own rights are trodden in the dust, and the lives of my friends are put in imminent peril by ruffians. I will hereafter prepare to defend myself and them at all hazards." Garrison, putting a hand affectionately on his shoulder, said, "Hold, my dear brother, you know not what spirit you are of. This is the trial of our faith and the test of our endurance. Of what value or utility are the principles of peace and forgiveness if we may repudiate them in the hour of peril and suffering? Do you wish to become like one of these violent, bloodthirsty men who are seeking my life? Shall we give blow for blow and array sword against sword? God forbid! I will perish sooner than raise my hand against any man, even in self-defense, and let none of my friends resort to violence for my protection. If my life be taken, the cause of emancipation will not suffer. God reigns. His throne is undisturbed by this storm. He will make the wrath of man to praise him. Of the remainder he will restrain. His omnipotence will at length be victorious." Garrison's friends now joined their entreaties to those of the mayor. At length he consented and made his way by a window onto a shed, and thence into a carpenter's shop which opened onto Wilson's Lane. He was accompanied by Mr. J.R. Campbell, but they found that their retreat was cut off by the mob. Garrison wanted to face them, but Campbell thought it was his duty to avoid capture as long as possible. He was put into a corner of the room and loose timber put in front to hide him. In a moment the room was entered and Campbell was seized. "This is not Garrison," the captor shouted to the mob outside, "but Garrison's and Thompson's friend, and he says he knows where Garrison is, but won't tell." A moment later, and then Garrison was discovered and dragged to the window. "Don't let us kill him outright," one of them cried. Then they tied a rope round his body, and he descended a ladder, placed for the purpose, into the street. He now extricated himself from the rope and was seized by Daniel and Aaron Cooley, who, although opponents of the abolitionists, were no friends of mob violence. They led him along, bareheaded, and cried aloud to the immense crowd, "He shan't be hurt. He is an American." The cry excited some sympathy, and the bearing of Garrison was one to increase it. As an eyewitness testifies, he walked erect with a calm countenance and flashing eyes, like a martyr going to the stake full of faith and manly hope. Mr. Josiah Quincy, Jr., the president of the Common Council, had from his window seen the action of the mob and at once hastened to his side. The news of the capture had also reached the mayor, and an appeal was made to him to save the life of Garrison. There was a tremendous struggle between the lynchers and those who were attempting to rescue their victim. The human tide set towards the old state house, and for a moment it was doubtful which side would be successful. The appeal of the mayor to the mob was little heeded, but the fierce rush to prevent Garrison from being taken into the hall was unsuccessful, and he was carried into the mayor's room. Here the authorities decided to commit him to jail as a rioter. He had been supplied with fresh clothing to take the place of the garments torn to pieces by the mob. Whilst a carriage, placed at the south door with a double line of guards, was attracting attention there, Garrison was hurried into a hackney coach at the north door. Notwithstanding what he had experienced, he kept saying, "Oh, if they would only hear me for 5 minutes, I am sure I could bring them to reason." His perfect courage and self-possession never deserted him throughout the trying ordeal. No sooner was he in the carriage than the mob recognized that he was being spirited away from their vengeance. They clung to the wheels, forced open the doors, and tried to overturn the vehicle. The driver used his whip freely to both horses and men, and drove at a furious pace and by a circuitous route to the city jail. All the way there was danger, and even at the prison door there was another ineffectual effort made to seize him. Finally, he found the refuge of liberty in a prison cell, where he was visited that same evening by Whittier, Bronson Alcott, and other friends. Garrison had made no objection to his removal to the jail, and it was not until next morning that he learned that he had been committed as a rioter. Next morning, he was brought before Judge Whitman and discharged. The examination was held in the jail, as the mayor and sheriff were afraid to have the trial in the courthouse. The city authorities anticipated further trouble and earnestly solicited Garrison to leave Boston for a few days until a more tranquil spirit prevailed. This he consented to do, all the more readily that the condition of Mrs. Garrison was one that demanded his anxious attention. The rioter Garrison placed on the walls of his cell this inscription: "William Lloyd Garrison was put into this cell on Wednesday afternoon, October 21st, 1835, to save him from the violence of a respectable and influential mob who sought to destroy him for preaching the abominable and dangerous doctrine that all men are created equal, and that all oppression is odious in the sight of God. Hail Columbia! Cheers for the autocrat of Russia and the Sultan of Turkey." Reader, let this inscription remain till the last slave in this despotic land be loosed from his fetters. When peace within the bosom reigns and conscience gives the approving voice, though bound the human form in chains, yet can the soul aloud rejoice. 'Tis true, my footsteps are confined, I cannot range beyond this cell, but what can circumscribe my mind to chain the wind's attempt as well? Confine me as a prisoner, but bind me not as a slave. Punish me as a criminal, but hold me not as a chattel. Torture me as a man, but drive me not like a beast. Doubt my sanity, but acknowledge my immortality.